Hi, this is David Wilk for Publishing Talks. This is a new series of podcast interviews with people in the book business who have some ideas and something to say that I think is worth exploring. Today I'm talking to Michael Cairns, who has a blog called Persona Non Data, which I think is a great name for a blog. How are you, Michael?
Great, how are you?
Good. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your background in the book business. What kind of, how'd you start? What have you done? You know, you don't have to go on too long, but just kind of give a little background.
Well, sure. You know, I kind of joke how I got started in the media business was working for Rupert Murdoch, because I started as what's known as a newsboy, selling one of his newspapers on a street corner in Melbourne, Australia, when I was about 13 or 14 years old. And there was a significant break between that exercise and when I went to join Macmillan Incorporated in 1989 after I had gone to business school. And at the time, Macmillan was $2 billion business and had pretty much every segment covered of the publishing industry, from information publishing. They had directories, and they had a language school, and they had trade publishing. And from that, I've stayed in the business. I've been a consultant as well as a chief executive of a publishing company, so pretty broad-based experience. I was also actually a book buyer while I was in college, and worked at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston for about a year and a half as the buyer for the book department there, which was a really interesting experience and a lot of fun, almost exploitive in the amount of money that they paid, but nevertheless, it was fun.
Well, yeah, that's actually it's a whole interesting part of the book business, which is the non-bookstore retailer that has more, you know, there's probably more books sold in those venues than people realize.
That's correct, yeah.
And these days you are mainly consulting with companies, I assume, in the book business, in overall media.
Yeah, that's correct. I've been consulting on my own now for almost 4 years, and I've worked with companies that are both traditional publishers, information publishers, as well as information providers, and across segments, so publishers as well as in the retail side of the business, as well as on the library side, and it's been very, very interesting. The last year, almost 2 years actually, I've been working almost exclusively with a startup company called MyWire.com, which is owned by a guy named Lewis Borders, who many people would know and recognize as the founder of the Borders Stores. And he and I have been working on releasing a new product into the marketplace, and we're very kind of excited about where that's going. And there's other stuff that Lewis is doing as well, which is kind of rethinking how information is provided to customers, and rethinking how subscription models kind of play into that, and building a revenue model around content, which has been really, really interesting.
So are you able to talk about that sort of, I know without, you may not be able to go into too many details, because I realize it's, you know, you don't want to give away some competitive secrets, but I'm kind of interested in this. You know, this is a pretty important area of concern, which is how consumers and publishers will meet in some effective way. It's the consumers want information, content, as we call it, you know, in various, obviously that can be defined in different ways, but consumers want it in a certain way. Publishers need to make sure it gets to them, obviously, to make a business, but there's a conversation to be had about how it's going to be paid for.
That's correct. And the way our product is called, MyWire is kind of the parent company, and out of that there's several opportunities to develop new businesses, and one of those is this company that we're calling Weeks Best. And the idea there is really kind of has its basis in curated content. And the way we kind of describe it is, if you look back at the way Reader's Digest and Time Magazine and Newsweek started back in the 20s, you know, they became the official publications for the stuff that people really should know about, and built obviously very, very strong franchises. But we believe that there's a similar way of migrating that concept onto the web and having what we're calling content experts manage particular topics, and the spectrum of topics could be it's by definition fairly narrow, but it could be up to as many as 1,000 different topics. And we'll find people and companies that would know particular topics extremely well, and they would manage, you know, a weekly digest of content that would run the gamut from news in depth to video and audio type content that they would have curated and recognized as being the stuff that somebody who was really very interested in, say, sailing or ethnic dance or broadcast television or you know, traveling to Italy on vacation. It could be any of those types of topics that this person or this entity would be managing that content to provide the best stuff that's available across the web. And it's pretty interesting. We're getting a lot of feedback from the people that we're speaking to become our content experts, and they recognize the opportunity. And the revenue model is based on delivering a very large number of subscribers to these emails and then converting them to a paid subscription model. And so there would be content behind a paywall.
And so, it's kind of like, I'm going to see if I understand it. I think I do. Does this mean that the consumer would pay a flat subscription and have access to all of the content, or does the consumer pay a specific subscription for each content expert that they want to hear from?
Yeah. So the way that our model works is that the email that you sign up for, say you're interested in ethnic dance, you sign up for that email, that would be free. And we are building the model such that a certain percentage of those subscribers who receive that content for free will convert to a larger basket of content that's behind a paywall. And, you know, obviously the conversion numbers are key to that, but we think that, and we're being fairly conservative in that, but we're building content behind the paywall that we would have kind of wider application to all of the email subscribers across that 1,000 topic spectrum, but would be valued content because it would be either exist at multiple locations, so we're providing ease of use for one subscription to get access to all of the content from multitude of subscribers, content producers, plus the subscription fee is not particularly high. It's only about $5 a month, and so we think that there's an opportunity to kind of build that model through really mass development of those email lists and then some conversion rate to paid subscriptions. So it's, and we're getting, as I said, we're getting a fair amount of positive feedback from that type of model.
And so, I mean, it makes sense to me. I think that, you know, as I talk to people who are publishing online, often it's experts who have created a kind of, either they have a personal newsletter or, you know, a website with a certain amount of content, and they've either figured out how to monetize it by subscription, or they're trying to figure out how to monetize it, you know, by selling products. I mean, there are all these different models out there that obviously on a smaller, non-aggregated scale to what you're doing. But
right.
It sounds like, for instance, if there was an expert in XYZ who has his or her own site today, and maybe they've got, you know, 15 or 20,000 people who are paying attention to them, they
right.
could join you
right.
in order to become part of a larger entity that is, you know, maybe you're aggregating some of the
right.
the pain points for them.
Yes.
And you're also providing them with access to bigger audience and kind of flowing their customer or their viewers into a larger stream.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And we are looking for those types of people, and we're also looking for kind of the larger kind of media companies. But the other thing that we do is that we share revenue with that content producer. So if it's somebody like that who's got, you know, 20,000 people that are regularly receiving either their blog information and reports and things like that, but it's not monetized, that there is an opportunity then through something like we're offering to actually provide some type of monetization for that audience. So it's an interesting concept for those types of people as well.
Right, and a kind of, you know, even though we all know that, or people talk about the web as being, you know, it's easy access, the barriers to entry are very low. Anybody mm-hmm. can start a blog, but that doesn't, as you know, as the numbers indicate, most blogs get tiny audiences.
Right.
You know, even
yes.
good ones don't necessarily. You're fighting for people's attention. You're not a media business. You're a sole practitioner trying to figure out how to talk to an audience and how to make an audience. And so while there's low barrier to entry, that has the corollary effect of making it very difficult to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's very true, and I've noticed that in my own experience of building my blog, which I just like most people concentrate or not fixated on, but I'm pretty interested in knowing how many people do subscribe, and you know it's grown over the years, but without kind of the public persona of being a head of a company that your name is in the news and people recognize you and seek you out and know who you are. That gives a fair amount of almost free publicity for somebody to build an audience. But if you don't have that, and you are the sole practitioner, as you mentioned, it's very difficult to build that audience. And if you have developed an audience of 10 or 20,000, you are a very, very significant expert or blogger, and you've built a very powerful audience, because as you say, the most people don't have an audience more than 100.
Right. No, I think that's true, and I think that's actually an opportunity. I'm guessing, and I'm sure you've thought of this, but there are so many authors who mm-hmm. are today faced with publishers saying to them, "Well, your ideas are good. You've got this book. You're a recognized expert in your field." But we need you to have a platform to publish your book. And a platform is not an easy thing for an author to build.
Right.
In fact, some of them, I think this tension is one that is going to be, kind of come to the forefront over the next few years, that authors are, in fact, often not good, precisely not good at what publishers are saying to them they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
They're good at thinking about ideas, which is one very important component of communication, and then expressing them. But that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a great marketer. You're not necessarily
right.
going to be a media company. All
right.
Contained within this, your life, there are just so many things you can do. So
right.
I think what you're suggesting, is actually kind of exciting to me, because I work with a lot of authors. I'm sure, I have a compared to many, I'm probably a tiny fraction of the universe that I'm in contact with. But every single one of them is faced with this conundrum.
I think that's very true. And I had a blog post I think I published earlier this year that was called Digital Concierge, and the idea was that authors, for the most part, are probably not comfortable or not very good at things like blogging and webinars and podcasts, all of that type of thing. And a role for the publisher, particularly at kind of the junior editor, assistant editor kind of role, is for them to actually facilitate that process, not do that stuff for them, but make it so easy for them to participate that all they really need to do is write the blog post, and they could, however they do that, but they get it all set up for them by the editor. They have to basically just show up for the webinar, and the editor would have set all of that, done all the work in advance to set that up. All of those types of things, that the role of the publisher now becomes more of a facilitator to build that kind of network and help that author do that. Otherwise, you're right, not only does the author not feel comfortable with those things, but they get completely distracted away from their main focus, which should be creating the content and helping to build that audience. And if you've got them trying to figure out how to dial into a a webinar or a conference call or whatever it is, and they're just not able to do that for whatever reason, that's kind of missing the point. And I think that there's a definite role there as roles change in publishing companies to actually kind of facilitate those new ways of marketing and promoting authors.
Right. No, I agree. I think it's the comparative I would make is in most rock and roll, if you're a rock and roll band, you have people who help bring an audience to see your show.
Right.
You know, when you're small and new, maybe, you know, you have very little audience, you're not very economically viable, you may have to do everything yourself. You know, you drive yourself in your van and, you know, you don't have a roadie, you carry your own equipment and you go around and you plaster sheets up on the, you know, on the walls in town to get an audience to come to your show. But eventually you've got to be able to get big enough so that other people can do that for you, because it's just exhausting to try to do it yourself.
Right.
Not to mention that, you know, as you said, and I think we agree, most authors, at least that I know, are not comfortable being all of those things wrapped up in one person.
Right.
And I agree. I think publishers need to redefine, and I, you know, I can, I, this is my little rant, and that is the root word of publish is to make public, and that means that's the publisher's job.
Yeah.
Authors may or may not be good publishers, but publishers need to do this in conjunction with the content creator.
I agree.
No, and I think so. You know, we've strayed a little bit from your discussion of MyWire and Week's Best, but I think that you've hit on something that sounds really interesting, and I'm certainly going to want to know more about it as it unfolds and follow what you're doing.
Cool. Great.
So, really, thanks for talking to me today. This is David Wilk talking to Michael Cairns of Persona Non Data. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Or is it Persona Non Data?
I say Persona Non Data.
Got it. Well, that's because you're from Australia.
Yes.
But and I guess I should also say of MyWire, which is another, that's your other big project.
Yes.
So thanks for talking to me, and we'll hope to see you soon.
Great. Thanks, David.
Take care.
Cheers. Bye.